Welcome to Trigger Talk Radio with your host, Dick Kupke. From handguns to rifles and hunting to self-defense, even a bit of politics. It's time to exercise your First and Second Amendment rights. Call and join the conversation, 734-822-1600. And now, your host, Dick Kupke.
Well, good morning and welcome back to Trigger Talk. And it is a very, very chilly but beautiful, beautiful day out there today. 14 degrees up here in Michigan. I know that other places it may be warmer, but not that much warmer. If you paid attention to the weather and the forecasts and stuff, I want to say, you know, it's almost like weather just kind of changes. And you know, you would think with all this anthropomorphic climate change that we'd be hot all the time, huh? But who would have guessed it? And I get a kick when they talk about, this was the hottest December we've had in a long time and all that stuff. And then they go back and they go, well, the record was 1931. That was 90 years ago. Okay, kind of cyclic kind of thing. You know, who knows? Well, this is not Trigger Talk climate change show. This is Trigger Talk gun talk show. And we're going to talk about firearms today. We're going to have, some responses to people who called in, a little bit of politics, some interesting, I want to say, I don't know if you know who Cam Edwards is. He used to do a thing called NRA Radio, and now he's on, I think it's bearingarms.com. He did a very, very neat piece on the Supreme Court this week. So I'm going to talk about that a little bit. And his point was that how they responded to the whole COVID-19 vaccine thing might be a foreshadow of what's going to happen on the Supreme Court case that's happening in New York right now on their restrictions on concealed carry and stuff. So interesting things today. Let's talk about some gun shows. And actually, the only gun show in Michigan, I want to say, I would have thought that there would be more gun shows this weekend because of it being a long weekend, but because it's a Martin Luther King weekend, and a lot of places are shut down on Monday, and a lot of people take that to, you know, do a long weekend with the kids or something like that. But I would have thought there'd be more. Actually, there was only one, Houghton Lake Gun Show, and it was canceled. So, oh geez. Now, fortunately, down south to Ohio, where they apparently don't care about COVID and stuff like that, I crack myself up sometimes. Let's see. Cincinnati Sharonville Gun Show, the Miami Town Gun Show in Whitewater Township, Lowell Gun Show in Lowell, Ohio, the Medina Gun Show in Medina, and the Lake Ashtabula County Gun Show in Middlefield, Ohio. So a couple of them in Missouri for you guys out there listening today. Xander, Washington County Fairgrounds, Fayette, Arkansas, must be on the state line. The Hannibal Moe and Quincy Gun Show. I think Quincy, is that right across the river? I'd have to look this up. Hannibal, Missouri, and Quincy, Illinois, maybe. That's the Admiral Kunst Armory at Hannibal, Missouri, okay? I always think of Hannibal Moe, and that was General Sherman Potter on MASH always talked about Hannibal Moe. I think that's where he was from. Let's see, the RK Springfield Gun Show, and that's in Springfield, Missouri. And in New York, you even got one for Mike in Long Island, who is still going to be there for 8 more months until he goes to Arizona, the Polish Community Center in Albany, New York. Now, that's far away from New York City, but still New York, okay? Let's see. Now, and I was going to say, I had a fun weekend last weekend, and it's because, well, what did we do? I started out doing some Visqueen and stuff for the Pistol House, and that was fine. Got there, and they were all done after the show when I went there, so that was great. So now the Pistol House is winterized at Tri-County Sportsman's League. It just means that if it's 14 outside, it may be 15 inside, so, but it does keep the wind off of you, okay? And then got to watch the Lions game. That was an outstanding Lions game. I just loved it. I even talked about Derek, and Derek's even smiling right now. What do you think of the Lions this last week?
It was a great win. Great way to end the season after it had been very disappointing most of the season, only winning 3 out of 17 games. But maybe the Lions can use this possibly as a springboard for next season and maybe start getting some team success, which they really haven't achieved on a consistent basis since the 1950s, way before I was born, unfortunately. So I certainly would love to see the Lions have some championship contender status.
Yeah. Well, do you know, out of the 13 games, is it 13? Yeah, 13 games that they lost, they actually lost 7 of those by one score and many in the last minute. They were, you know, there were 3 of them that were on last second field goals, right?
Yeah, they did lose some close games throughout the season, but that's just the nature of the National Football League. Most of the games are going to be decided by one score, and the Lions, they just have to be able to step up in those tight games and be able to have some playmakers to make some plays offensively and defensively for them to be a more consistent winner, and they just don't have that right now.
Yeah, although I have such a smile on my face after that last game, that'll carry me over till the next season starts. So I'm next year's the year. I say that every year to my kids. They go, oh geez, Dad's still in his little euphoria there, but next year's the year. Okay, let's see now. I was reading this about, I mentioned it a little bit earlier, Cam Edwards, who writes for BearingArms.com, and he does a good job. He used to do a radio show, and he does a lot of the gun politics stuff. So I want to say, and I'm giving credit to him, I wouldn't normally like to read something on the radio, but I think this is worthwhile us thinking about, because the whole thing with rights, individual rights, constitutional rights, God-given rights, things like that, is a big deal. And the difference between people that want to take those away or want to maintain those can be pretty jarring. I mean, I want to say when you look at the vaccine mandate thing this week, where you could just assume that the liberal wing of the Supreme Court would vote in support of vaccine mandates, which they did. Okay, and I want to say, do you know what it reminds me of? I was thinking about this morning. Why don't they? You know, the people that the Supreme Court, the liberals, everybody, they should be watching Star Trek, okay? Now, why do you say that? Well, because Star Trek was like, back in the 60s, people had patriotism, they were in favor of individual rights and society and your own destiny and things like that. Imagine, and I hope that, I don't know if Dan Martin listens, I always send Dan Martin stuff on Star Trek things, but there was the original pilot called The Cage, I think it was, and there was these people on the liberal wing, the Kagans, the Sotomayors, and the Breyers as what I used to call the butthead people, okay? Now, these people were on that original episode, the pilot of Star Trek, and they called them buttheads because they were actually very small little women in costume. But they had, like, the lobes of their brain were huge, and in the back, it looked like somebody's gluteus maximus, okay? So they looked like buttheads, okay? So I always called them the butthead people. But these were people that always thought they were smarter than everybody, and that can't we all just get along and and no viol- and you don't even talk anymore because you can just telepathically communicate, okay? And if you watch all of the Star Treks in those first three seasons and stuff, you often found that there were storylines about where a society of benevolent people were keeping watch over all these little commoners and feeding them food and why aren't they happy? They all they got to do is exist, and we give them everything they need. And pretty soon these people were rebelling, okay? And they wanted their own freedoms. And you know what? That's where there was a book out there I read one time called "Everything I Needed to Learn I Needed to Know I Learned from Watching Star Trek." Outstanding book, okay? And it's true. Back then, the storylines, you know, look at all the Westerns and things like that. The storylines and stuff were, personal responsibility, good versus evil, all this kind of stuff. Now it's all blurred, okay? Let's just take care of people. Well, that's kind of what Cam Edwards was doing in this piece. Now, I'm going to read this. And then I got an interesting topic, one of my favorite topics to go into. But let's see, reading the Second Amendment tea leaves in the Supreme Court of the United States vaccine mandate ruling, okay? On the surface, there are a lot of similarities between the Biden administration's vaccine mandate put on ice by the Supreme Court on Thursday and the New York City carry laws that the Supreme Court is currently considering. Beyond the obvious difference between a vaccine and a firearm, one case revolves around an OSHA rule, while the other case is changing a state law that turns the Second Amendment on its head. Despite the differences, however, I think we might actually be able to glean a couple of things from Thursday's ruling, starting with the fact that we had three separate opinions handed down. There was the majority opinion saying the enforcement of Biden's mandate, staying the enforcement of Biden's mandate. But in addition to the dissent by the progressive wing of the court, we also saw a concerning opinion authored by Justice Neil Gorsuch and joined by Clarence Thomas and Samuel Alito. That's much stronger in the criticism of Biden's attempt to power grab than the per curiam opinion released by the court. Both the majority and the concurring opinions agree that the OSHA regulations go too far by introducing a workplace rule that extends beyond the workplace. But Gorsuch's opinion brought home the threat to individual liberty posed by Biden's vaccine mandate. The question before us is not how to respond to the pandemic, but who holds the power to do so? The answer is clear. Under the law as it stands today, that power rests with the states and Congress, not OSHA. In saying this, we do not impugn the intentions behind the agency's mandate. Instead, we only discharge our duty to enforce the law's demands when it comes to the question of who may govern the lives of 84 million Americans. Respecting these demands may be trying to in times of stress, but if this court were to abide them only in the tranquil conditions, declarations of emergencies would never end, and the liberties our Constitution's separation of powers seeks to preserve would amount to little. In other words, even in states of declared emergencies, our rights don't shrivel up and shrink down to the size of a raisin. Of course, for the progressive wing of the court, our rights must always take a backseat to the interests and desires of the state. He was talking with a guy named Mark Walters on Armed American Radio on Thursday, who made an excellent point about the dissenting opinion and how it relates to the Bruin case in New York's concealed carry laws. See, I am trying to relate this to guns, but I just think it really struck me when I read this. Read the opening paragraph of the dissent and replace the word COVID-19 with gun violence, and you can see the line of argument that Breyer, Sotomayor, and Kagan are likely to use a few months from now. So this was the opening statements. Every day, COVID-19 poses grave dangers to the citizens of this country, and particularly to its workers. This disease may now kill almost 1 million Americans and hospitalize almost 4 million. It spreads by person-to-person contact in confined indoor spaces, so causes harm in nearly all workplace environments. And in those environments, more than any others, individuals have little control, therefore little capacity to mitigate risk. COVID-19 is, in short, a menace in work settings. The proof is around us. Since the disease's onset, most Americans have seen their workplace transformed. Now, I don't know about you, but I can easily see that these same three justices claim, every day gun violence poses a grave danger to the citizens of the country. So I really think that it's quite interesting that, I mean, they're showing their underpants, so to speak, on what they're going to do. In the case of, oh, but it's for the good of the country and good of the people that we can breach all of the rights that you're given, like in the Second Amendment. So very interesting. I didn't mean to be boring reading that to you, but it is an interesting alignment of thoughts. Okay. Now, let's see. This was my favorite, one of my favorite calibers. And I got an email, and it was an email from listener Tom this week. He goes, coming in loud and clear via the internet here in Faribault, Minnesota, as I wait for my daughter's hockey game to start. Wondering if you could talk a bit about the 22 Magnum round. Look at this in a looking for this as a range pistol to shoot with kids, maybe friends looking to shoot for the first time. Have a great weekend. Thank you, listener Tom. Okay. Well, say no more. I love the 22 Winchester Magnum rimfire round. And I don't know. You look back. I mean, I loved BB guns. I loved pellet guns. I loved the 22. But when we got a 22 Magnum, man, I suddenly was a sniper, okay? I believe it was a Marlin. That's the one gun I cannot find. I think it was, it went to my uncle, and it could have gone out to one of my cousins or something like that. But the 22 Magnum we got, it was a bolt action with a magazine. And I felt like, I mean, to me, it was like a Springfield M1903. I thought I was really something with that thing. And, of course, looking back now, we know that it was a good round. It is a good round, but it wasn't any 30-06 like in the mind of a 6 or 7 year old would think. But the 22 Winchester Magnum rifle. They also call it the 22 WMR or the 22 Magnum or the 22 WMRF, 22 Mag. It's got a lot of names like that. And actually, it's morphed into something. And this is for a different weekend. We'll talk about it sometime. The this is the 20th anniversary of the Winchester or the Hornady 17 HMR, the Hornady Magnum rifle, which was they took a 22 Magnum case and necked it down to 17 caliber and turned it into a very successful rifle. But the 22 Mag was originally loaded with a bullet weight of about 40 grains and delivered about 2,000 feet per second and from a rifle barrel. And it was actually quite an effective round for varmints, for groundhogs and foxes and things like that that you might be needing to dispatch on the farm. So it was really something. It was released in 1959, and it was by Winchester, but the first rifle to be chambered for it was actually a Marlin Levermatic. It was a Marlin lever action, and that was in 1959. So it was, it's been called the only successful rimfire introduced in the 20th century, which would mean the 1900s for those of you who are too young to think about terms of 19th century, 20th century, things like that. But it was introduced actually, the next, and 2 years later, it came out in, or a year later, it came out with the Winchester Model 61, which was a pump action, which I think I would like one of those. I need to find one of those because I like a, I like the pump action rifles. And then they also introduced it, Smith. By the time it came out in the Winchester 61, Smith & Wesson Ruger had revolvers in it, okay? And I have one. Matter of fact, I have right now, I have a Winchester 9422M, and I have a Ruger single six with an interchangeable cylinder for it. So you can actually shoot it out of the same gun. Now, you can't do that in a rifle that has just a single chamber, and the reason is the way the round is designed. The bore diameter of the barrel is 0.224, the same as 22 long rifles. So that's why when you change a cylinder, you can shoot it out of the same pistol, okay? But the thing that's different is the cartridge is actually larger than 0.224. And why this is important, and the difference is a 22 long rifle, when you look at that bullet on a 22 long rifle, it is, the bullet is the same diameter as the cartridge. It actually uses what is called a heeled bullet, and a heel, like your heel, H-E-E-L. And what it is that the back end of the bullet that goes into the cartridge is actually necked down so that it is one constant diameter across the cartridge and across the bullet. Okay, and that's a 22 long rifle like that. But the 22 Magnum rimfire, the 22 mag, is actually larger, and it's more like any other cartridge that you see in center fire cartridges and stuff, where the brass is actually larger and proud to the bullet, and then it's crimped onto the bullet. So that's why you need to be able to have a rifle that's chambered in it with the correct diameter of the chamber, or a cylinder that changes on the revolver. And you can't go cramming. I mean, I would imagine there are probably people who thought, well, it's the same diameter bullet, I'll just cram it into my chamber. Wrong. Okay. It's not only too big from the standpoint of diameter, but it's also too long. It won't fit in a 22 long rifle chamber. It'd be dangerous to try to cram it in, especially because being a rimfire, if you're trying to cram it in on a bolt or something, you're actually have a possibility of setting off that propellant charge. So at any rate, the other guns that it was popular in when it first came out, and I love these, and actually they started making them again, although they flopped the numbers around, was the Savage Model 24. And that was a rifle that had two barrels on it. It would have like a 410 with a 22, or it might have a 20 gauge with a 22 Magnum, or a 410 with a 22 Magnum. It was actually neat. It's kind of a neat hunting slash survival rifle because you could use it for both small game with the 22 or the 22 Magnum, or you could use it with the 410 or the 20 gauge. So it was actually kind of neat. And they switched the numbers around now. Back then it was called a Model 24. Now, since 2012, they call it a Model 42. And now it's actually got like a synthetic stock. And actually, though, the one that I was familiar with, this old Savage, actually had a synthetic stock back in the old days. It was a polymer stock, much like a Remington Nylon 66. So at any rate, I want to say the thing to think about, too, with a 22 Magnum is that it's actually got quite a bit of energy in it. But it's actually about halfway, well, a third of the way between that and a 223. So it was like 350 foot-pounds of energy versus 900 for a 223 back then. So at any rate, I want to say we're going to talk now about the different guns that shoot it. And We'll do that when we get back. This is Dick Kupke at Trigger Talk Radio here at Wham Talk 1600 and 92.7 FM. We'll be back in a few minutes.
Wham Talk 1600. Welcome back to Trigger Talk Radio with your host, Dick Kupke. Call now, 734-822-1600 to join in the conversation.
And we're back. And Derek just informed me that during the portion that I was reading about Cam Edwards, that I had inadvertently shut off the mic for 10 seconds. So there might have been a quiet dead air kind of thing there. And so I'm not going to go back and reread it. But what I will do is I will post that on my website because I did find it an interesting read. I'll post it on TriggerTalkRadio.com. It'll be the first thing up on the main page, so that you can read it and miss whatever it is that I don't know what portion it was, but it was during that couple minutes when I was reading that. Speaking of going to the website, there's always a lot of stuff there. There are posts and podcasts from going all the way back to 2012, I think. I put up little cartoons and memes and things like that that I have fun with. But importantly, on the right-hand side of the page, it says categories, and there is it says ballistic test results. Now, these are the test results that Tom from Northfield Township and I work on together that we have done. All sorts of them. Well, the first one we ever did was the 380, and then the 40 Smith & Wesson, and then the 9mm, and then the 45 ACP, and lastly, we did the 22 long rifle and 22 magnum ballistic test data and images. So what I'm saying is, if you go to ballistic test results and click on that, it'll bring up a page, and then it has a whole group of pictures of the actual ammunition that we shot, the results in what we call a dirt tissue test, which is replicating ballistic gelatin, and then also a bone test where we actually have a method of media that we use that mimics shooting through a bone. And Tom did that with, pork bones to figure out how to replicate it. So at any rate, the first one up there is the 22 long rifle and 22 magnum ballistic test data. That's the one you want to go and click on now, and you can look along and see the data with it, okay? And what I did, we did 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 different brands and sizes and weights and stuff of 22 caliber magnum rimfire ammo. And we did it. These were all done in a pistol, in a 5.5-inch barreled revolver, okay? However, and we did the Arms Corps 22 mag, which was actually like the cheapest one. That was the one that was, matter of fact, some of these were hard to find at the time too. But the that was one of the ones that would be more like a training or target shooting round. We did the 22 CCI Max jacketed hollow points. That's a plus, it's called a Max plus V plus velocity, 30 grain, a very light bullet. Hornady Critical Defense with the FTX round. Now, well, the other thing about the 22 Magnum projectile, even though it's the same diameter as the 22 long rifle, there's a big difference in the construction of the bullet, okay, for the most part. They are actually a precision bullet like you might find on a centerfire rifle where they have a core, they have maybe a hollow point, they may have a ballistic tip on it, and they are actually a plated scored bullet, okay, as opposed to like a lead copper washed bullet or a copper plated bullet or something. It's a lead, usually a lead core with an actual copper jacket on it, okay. We did the Hornady VMAX, the Remington Premier, Max VMAX, the Winchester PDX-1, which is a defender round, which is a again, designed for personal defense, and then the Winchester Super X, which is also another training kind of round. And I'm mentioning it because we talk about the what it did in the wound channel, what it did for expansion, and what the velocities were. And the velocities are interesting. Now, I want to note that there's a difference between, especially in something like a 22 Magnum, when you're shooting this through a short-barreled revolver, and there are short-barreled ones, and we'll go into some of these guns shortly here, but and what is typically a 19, 20, 22, 24-inch rifle barrel. Because remember, everybody, and this is for both older and newer shooters out there, that the velocity of the round is dependent on how long that bullet travels through the barrel, and the gases in the propellant are expanding and continue to accelerate that bullet. Okay, so what happens is, if you're shooting it out of a 2-inch barreled revolver, then it's only got a 2-inch area for the gases to expand and accelerate that bullet and move it up to its maximum speed, okay, the muzzle velocity when it exits that barrel. Okay, from that point on down, it tends to stay the same a little bit, and then it slows down. Okay, but if you are shooting it in a 20-inch barreled rifle, you've got 20 inches, 10 times the amount of barrel for that gas to continue to expand. So that is true whether it's a 22 Magnum or whether it's a 38 or a 44 or whatever. Okay, and the point is that sometimes they make different ammunition for these barrels, different barrel lengths. Like you might have a short-barreled ammunition for a revolver that's only got a 2-inch barrel, and it has a powder that expands completely in that 2 inches of movement and actually tries to, it ends up totally burning so that it's not still burning when the projectile exits the muzzle. And the point for that is you don't want to have a bunch of muzzle flash. Like I mentioned the other day on a short-barreled Mosin Nagant, okay? Now, let's say that you've got a Mosin Nagant and you're shooting a 9130 and it's got the long barrel and that powder is all burnt as the bullet exits. Okay, great. But now you're shooting a short-barreled one, and it is still burning when the bullet exits the muzzle. You have a huge amount of muzzle blast, okay? I'm saying like a fireball. It looks like a flamethrower, okay? Well, the same thing can happen on revolvers, too, and other short-barreled guns. I'm carrying a 45 today, that has a 3.3-inch barrel. That's relatively short. If you are shooting it out of a gun that has a 5-inch barrel or a 5.5-inch barrel, you would get more velocity out of it. So I want to say the 22 Magnums tend to publish, except for when it comes to the self-defense rounds, okay, they tend to publish velocity numbers based on a rifle barrel. So, for example, that CCI Max jacketed hollow point plus V, okay, they advertise it at 2,200 feet per second. Well, that may be true out of a 20-inch rifle barrel, but out of a 5.5-inch revolver barrel, it only went 1,523 feet per second. So we also published the velocity versus advertised, if they advertised it. And actually, some of the ones that were the self-defense rounds, I'll give you an example, that Winchester PDX-1, they know that that's meant to be a self-defense round. So they advertised that at 1,295 feet per second, and it came out at 1,224 for us, pretty close. The Hornady Critical Defense with the FTX, they advertised it at 1,000 feet per second, and it came out at 1,196. 99, okay, 1,200 feet per second. So you know, when they say it's like when you buy a car and they go, your mileage may vary. Well, your velocity and energy from that round may vary depending on the gun you're shooting it out of and the length of the barrel, okay? So let me go back to the guns, because there are actually a lot of, by the way, in addition to neat rounds like that, you can get a thing, and they called these snake guns, snake rounds and garden guns, where they would make them, and it's like a shot shell that it actually has a little plastic bubble on the end of it, and it has like little BBs in it, okay? Not real BBs, because a BB is a .177 caliber, but it was like little tiny bird shot in it, and it was for snakes in a garden or for birds and things like that. So it's kind of interesting. So all of these different rounds, you may have, and they're all .224, and if you actually look at them, they are anything from a .22 short to a long rifle, to a .22 Magnum rifle, to a .22 Hornet. They're all .22 caliber, and actually up through the .223, which is the and .556, which is the AR standard round. Okay, but they all have different performance, and they all have they're all a little bit of a trade off in cheapness, you know, cost and velocity and accuracy and things like that. There have been it used to be that ammo, and everybody knows that ammo costs more nowadays, okay? So when you are buying ammo, you used to go into Walmart, you'd buy, I think I still have some, 550-round Federal bulk packs that say $7.99 or $7.49 or $8.49 on them, very cheap, okay? Well, now that same amount of ammo is $27 or something like that for 550 rounds of long rifle, okay? $27, $33, something like that. Same thing with the .22 Magnum rounds, okay? They used to be $5.99 for inexpensive box of Winchester Super X or something. And then they were $7.99. That's still a pretty good deal for 50 rounds, okay? Not anymore. It's just like all the other ammo. It's gotten much, much more expensive. And in many cases, actually, the cheapest that I could find was a box of Hornady Varmint Express, and it was $18.99 for a box of 50. That's 38 cents a round. So you're not getting off, you know, cheap, as cheap, but you are getting decent performance in a varmint round and stuff like that at what is less than center fire prices, okay? Now, when you go up to things like the gold dot, spear gold dot, that's meant to be like a hunting round or a self-defense round, it's $33.79 a box. So we're talking, 68 cents a round. You can find about the cheapest I found is 38 cents a round. You can buy it in bigger quantities, but it's still not that cheap. It's Federal has a BYOB, bring your own bullet, a little tube that you can buy it for $99 for 250 rounds. The shot shells, which is only a pack of like 10 of them, is 21. So those are $2 a round for the shot shells. But it's not the bargain it used to be, but it's still cheaper than center fire ammunition, okay? And if you know its limitations, now people always would say, well, that .22 mag is not very accurate. Well, it's pretty accurate, and it's as accurate as the gun and the person behind the gun, probably. If you are using iron sights, It's how good are your eyes? If you're using scopes, it's what's your technique? How is your breathing and your trigger control and things like that? It is more than enough accuracy for most of the varmint shooting that you would do. And certainly if you're just wanting to plink and target shoot with it, it would be accurate. There are quite a few pistols out there now for it, and I'm going to mention some of them. And they vary from even guns that are, I want to say replicas of larger guns, like the Rock Island Armory, which is an importer, basically. But Rock Island Armory XT is a 1911 clone in 22 Magnum, semi-automatic, 5-inch barrel. It is pretty cool. One that everybody seems to have their sights on these days is the Kel-Tec PMR-30. Okay, now Kel-Tec is a gun company that makes a lot of guns that are interesting, okay? They've got a new one, their P-50, that is the 5.7 by 28, same as the Ruger 5.7 and like the old HK or FNH 5.7. And it is a really unique gun. You can't even find those. They're like $1,200. But the Kel-Tec PMR-30 is a basically polymer firearm. It has a lot of little Allen screws and, cap screws and stuff that hold it all together. It's kind of an interesting gun, but it has a 30-round magazine. You can put, a half a box of ammo in that grip. And it is a very capable gun, the thing is that as I go through some of these here, and some of them repeat because I got them from multiple lists. But the thing is that when it is used in close range, it is a formidable firearm. Okay, I want to say the 22 long rifle. Even that, people go, oh, well, that's not a self-defense round. Do you know what? If you look at that ballistic test that Tom and I did, it actually performed quite well. It performed as 22 long rifle performed as well as the 22 Magnum in many cases, in expansion and penetration and things like that. So it can be a pretty darn good round for self-defense. And then lastly, there's one called an Excel Accelerator, which is kind of like, looks like an old Ruger Mark II. Let's see. Let me get to where I was going to look at the different guns. Okay, so there's the Rock Island 1911, which is pretty cool. And let's see. The Kel-Tec PMR-30, which is neat, which I just mentioned, and it goes for about $545 when you can find them, and you can find them nowadays. Let's see. And the Accelerator is a pretty interesting round. It is made by Excel Arms, and it's $454 also. So the top choices for handguns in chambered in 22 Winchester Magnum rifle in 2022. Let's see, the Ruger LCR. What an outstanding choice. That is a small, lightweight, concealable, hammerless revolver in 22 Magnum rifle. The Charter Arms Pathfinder. I want to say these are snub noses now, like, a 2-inch barrel. And the Charter Arms Pathfinder is one. These are fairly light. They weigh like 12 ounces. They are a light gun. The Kel-Tec PMR-30 is, again, neat. The Smith & Wesson Model 351. I mean, these aren't just made by off-the-wall companies like Rock Island Armory or something like that. Smith & Wesson, Ruger, Charter Arms makes them. Okay. Let's see. The North American Arms Wasp. What is that? Well, that is one of these little tiny, tiny North American arm revolvers where the cylinder actually comes out. I have seen these for years, and I have yet to buy one, but I have decided I'm going to get one in 22 Magnum. Taurus 992 Tracker. Again, it is a revolver, but this one's actually a longer revolver with a long barrel meant for hunting. Oh, yeah, you can do that. The North American Arms Ranger, another one of the little North American ones. Let's see, what are some others here? The Charter Arms again. Chiapa makes they are very popular in single action guns, and actually you can still get the single action Ruger Single Six with both a 22, and remember I said because the chamber is larger, you can have a different cylinder for it. And almost all of these single action arms companies will make a 22 Magnum revolver with a cylinder, okay? Let's see. Hold on a second. The EAA Bounty Hunter is another one. That's like $375 compared to the Ruger. The Ruger is like $699. Although there is even a better deal out there. The Heritage Arms Rough Rider. And you see these, they also make one called a Barkeep. Okay, which is a little tiny one meant to be for behind the bar in the old saloons in the Western days, but it is $184, and it has both a 22 and a 22 Magnum cylinder with it. So, pretty cool. The same thing for the Barkeep. They normally lay list for, you see them at like Rural King and at Dunham's and stuff like that in their coupons area for like $129.95. You go, whoa, that's cheap. And then usually it's an extra $25 to $50 for the 22 Magnum cylinder. Okay. So then there's rifles out there too. And hold on a second. Let me get back to the rifles. I don't know how I managed to copy some of this stuff. Oh, there's another one out there that I liked that I mentioned this year. Now, this is mainly more of a novelty gun, but it's got two barrels. It's called Standard Manufacturing Model S333 Thunderstruck. And when you pull it, it fires two shots. It's a revolver, but it has two shots at a time. Interesting. Interesting. And that would be two very capable shots as well. Now, when it came to 22 rifles, and this is just like the one that I remember having as a kid, a Marlin 22M, XT22M, bolt action with a five-shot magazine, for $276. The same thing, Savage makes their 93, which is also the same thing as a 93-17 in HMR, a 93 in 22 mag, and they also make it in regular 22 long rifle. $289, really cheap, okay? Ruger American Rifle also makes one in the their base rifle, and it is, let me see, how much is that one? $359, $329 at Cabela's. So I want to say, and there's some other ones that are more expensive, $515 for a CZ-457, but they are a very capable, and if you want to go beyond the 22 for hunting, for reaching out there, you can feel more comfortable at 100 yards and stuff, a 22 Magnum or a 22 HMR, which is the 17 caliber version of it, is a very good choice, okay? There's another one called a Bergara, and it is $565, and actually, what's interesting is the Savage A22, and we'll talk about that in a few minutes when I get back. They actually specially designed one for semi-automatic operation, and it's because it's got higher pressure. So we'll talk about that when we get back. This is Dick Kupke at Trigger Talk Radio here at Wham Talk 1600. We'll be right back.
Welcome to Trigger Talk Radio with your host, Dick Kupke. From handguns to rifles and hunting to self-defense, even a bit of politics. It's time to exercise your First and Second Amendment rights. Call and join the conversation, 734-822-1600. And now, your host, Dick Kupke.
And we are back with the second hour of Trigger Talk Radio for today, which is January 15th. And we're having a little bit of difficulty with the phones. So if you were trying to call in, and I think that I did see that Tom from Northfield Township tried to call in, and then we got disconnected or something. So Tom, you can go ahead and call back. And for everybody else, we will try to get to you with one exception. Okay, that's Derek and I are gonna, and he knows who he is. So, at any rate, we'll keep an eye on that now. So, I was just talking about 22 magnums. We have a way to tell who's calling, and so at any rate. What we're trying to do is, and the way we're set up here is the call screener stuff is in my booth and Derek is in the other booth. So I'm having to give him hand signals. This is unusual for us. But at any rate, I was talking about the 22 Magnum rifles. And I like the good old bolt actions. And I actually have a... Okay, we do have, and Tom is on trying to call in now, too. So at any rate, we'll get to you guys. And Derek will handle you because our phones are lighting up like the NORAD control center here. Those of you who recall what NORAD was. So at any rate, I have a 22 Magnum 9422M rifle that is lever action, and I love it. It's a Winchester, and it's actually, it was purchased for my son, but I have it still at my house right now. And gosh, I've had it for 10, 15 years. Gosh, we got another call. Let's see. The other one is Ed from Ypsilanti. So if you want to go ahead and just give me somebody that's on hold, Derek, we'll go ahead and take it. Who we got?
Tom from Northfield Township.
Hi, Tom. How are you today?
I'm fine, Dick. You know, you were talking about the, you know, the 22 cal testing that we did, and I and my wife were listening, and she goes, "You better call in. I think he's throwing out the bat signal." And so I called in, you know, at the, you know, in the second hour.
Yeah,
and you know, the one thing I noticed about the testing we did, maybe a lot of people don't know, is, you know, my daughter Becky was with me when I did some of that testing, and women are more inclined to want to use like a 22 long rifle or a 22 mag. Because of the noise issue.
I very much agree with that. I think there's a couple of things, and that is why some of the and Theron and I have talked about that before, because the well-armed woman and stuff like that, they say, you know, you guys should consider some of these 22s as self-defense guns, and that would include 22 long rifles or 22 magnums, because if you are recoil adverse, you know, if you're afraid of the recoil of something that is much like a 380 or a 40 or something that would sting your hand, okay, it would be easier to shoot, and it has less muzzle blast and less noise, and I think that that's very true.
Yeah. And you know, she, when you had a few years ago, when you had the women on target, you know, that thing out of Tri-County,
yep.
She went to that, and she liked, going to shooting the 22s. Now she shot everything up to, including a 50 cal, you know, pistol that was set up,
Yeah.
You know, on some of the ranges. She's, you know, she's an adventurous girl, although she is, you know, I should tell everybody, she is a petite girl. She's, you know, short, lightweight, you know, petite.
Yep.
But she is not opposed to picking up a hand cannon and firing it.
Yeah.
She doesn't care for that, you know, but well, see, she will do it.
I agree with you there. And I think that the we always find this. And by the way, again, Tom, I'm hoping I need to include you. Hopefully you'll be around on June 11th and you can be one of our coaches again, okay?
Yeah, that would be fine.
Yeah. And the thing is that the women, we start them off on the 22 pistols. That's the first pistol they're typically exposed to. Because it's a good thing to teach fundamentals with and stuff. They're not afraid to shoot the 38s and the 45s and even the big 480 Ruger and stuff like that. And by the way, this year, you know what I'm going to set up down there for them? I already talked to the guys in the large handgun range. They also have down there on the action range, they typically have like an AR-15 for people if they want to shoot. Okay, because so many people are, oh my gosh, that AR-15, that's such a powerful gun. And then they shoot it and they go, oh, well, this thing has less kick than, you know, a 30-06 or something. You know what I mean? It's like a soft shooting gun. So they are more than willing to try them, okay? And I'm going to set up, I told them I'll put it down there for them, my AR in 50 Beowulf. Okay, and I'll donate a couple boxes of ammo to the cause for that, for people who would want to shoot a 50 caliber AR-15. But what I find though is that if somebody, and this is not just women, this would be true for anybody, if the only gun that you have has too much recoil that it hurts your hands or it hurts your ears or you don't like it and you can't do a follow-up shot, it stings so bad, you're not going to practice with it and you're not going to carry it, okay? So, like you said, they will shoot the big ones so that they, and ladies like the big guns, okay? We know that, okay? But they also are comfortable, more comfortable shooting the lighter recoil and light muzzle blast guns, and that's why some of these 22s for self-defense, the 22 Magnums, and actually like the Ruger LCP light rack they just came out with is in 22 long rifle, and if you go and look at the ballistic tests that you did, some of those had very good numbers, didn't they, the different 22 ammo?
Yes, they did. They did very well. I was surprised at a lot of that.
Yep. Well, thank you for pointing that out, and I'm glad that you and your wife are sitting there and listening today.
Yeah, she said, "Hey, it's getting close to 11. Are you going to listen to Trigger Talk?" And I says, "Well, yeah." You know? So she said, "Bring the radio in," and I came upstairs to the man cave to call in, you know, because she was watching Night Court.
You know, I have been watching Night Court when I work out on the week mornings too. I watch Grace Under Fire and Night Court on MeTV. So
that's what she's doing.
Very good. Hey, well, thank you for listening today, and thanks for bringing that up, and I'll talk to you more in the future, because we've got, I mentioned it last week, that new caliber called 30 Super Carry that we're going to have to get into, right?
Yeah, I was reading an article in one of the gun magazines about that.
Yep.
And that's looks like an interesting round.
Yep, it does. Well, thanks for calling in today, Tom. Thank you for listening.
All right.
Okay. Talk to you later. Bye. Did we have, Derek, we had a couple other calls. Ed from Ypsilanti, did he not wait?
Actually, he just wanted to tell me some information about his program
today. Okay. Very good. So at any rate, I want to say for years they have said that you can't do a semi-automatic rifle with a 22 Magnum. And that despite the fact that I know of some companies that make them, and I have a friend, I guess what happens is it probably lawyers got involved, okay? Because what happens is they tried to do, I want to say the 10/22 Magnum, they did a, Remington does a nice 597, a Remington 597. Remington does one called a 597, and I actually have a friend who I had lent him the 22 Magnum rifle to take care of some groundhogs that he had out on Ford Lake there, and he loved it so much he wanted his own, and then he decided the Remington 597. Well, what happens is most of the 22 Magnums that were out there were a simple blowback design, okay, which is exactly what a 22 long rifle is. It's a blowback design. Well, the concern was that, I want to say, what you have to have for a blowback design. Now, I want to say there's a difference. I guess we'll get into some basic gun differences here. There are guns that fire from what's called a locked breech. A locked breech is one where the travel of the bolt, at the last second, it engages either in some lugs or it might travel up and lock into place. So what happens is when the cartridge fires, the pressure is held into the barrel and the chamber for a brief period of time, typically while the barrel starts to move back, okay? Then the pressure dissipates slightly and the breech unlocks and it allows the cartridge to be extracted and kicked out, okay? Well, that is from a locked breech, okay? And so what happens is on a blowback gun, it doesn't lock the breech. It just has springs that are strong enough to hold the barrel or the breech, the chamber closed long enough for the pressure to dissipate slightly as the projectile moves down the barrel. And then it overcomes the pressure of the recoil spring, and it extracts the round and kicks it out. Okay, that's from a blowback design. Well, people said, and probably, like I said, lawyers were involved, a 22 Magnum has a pretty darn strong amount of chamber pressure, like 26,000 PSI. Okay, now that's not as strong as a 357 Magnum with 35,000 or I want to say a 30-06 at 59,000 or something like that. So it's less than those guns that typically have locked breeches and stuff, but it is right on the verge of not working very well reliably to hold the breech shut. And I think probably what happened is the breech may have come back slightly and they may have had a fractured case and they said, this isn't worth it. We're not going to, depending on the quality of the ammo and where it's made and how old it is and stuff, it's not worth it. So actually quite a few of those firearms are not in production anymore. Well, several years ago, Savage came out with, and because there was a lot of people looking, not so much for the 22 Magnum as a semi-automatic, but the 17 HMR, which not only has the same pressures as a 22 Magnum, but it's actually a more accurate round based on its design and ballistic characteristic and stuff like that. So that's why there were a lot of people who were really interested in the 17 HMR for varmint shooting, for target shooting, for bird shooting, for all these kind of things that demand accuracy, okay? but they wanted it in a semi-automatic. So Savage came out with what they called an A22 and an A17. And they are 22 magnums that fire from a locked breech, and they have what's called a delayed blowback action. And it utilizes a little, what they call an interrupter lug, that holds the chamber closed until the peak pressure has subsided, and then the round is out of the barrel and downrange, and then it allows the breech to open. It's kind of like almost like if you imagine the old roller locker ones. That, let's see, 313. That's okay. The old roller locker rounds on the old German MG-37 and MG-42 machine guns, and like the HK-91 and stuff like that. So it's got some neat features that helps allow the gas to dissipate before the breech opens. So they came out with that in the A17 and the A22, and that is a very desirable gun now. It is. We've got Phil from Detroit. Hi, Phil. How are you today?
Howdy. Back to barrel length versus velocity.
Yes.
That's a great subject. And, I used to shoot metallic silhouette competition. And for the standard target velocity rimfire ammo we used, somebody with a cranny discovered that we didn't need any more than 18-inch barrel length to burn the propellant.
Ah.
And any more than that was just extra weight and drag, actually, on the bullet.
Yeah. Yeah, it actually, if you've already dissipated all the gas expansion, then it doesn't do any good to have any more barrel, right?
Right. And the length and the weight, and it's just superfluous. Yeah. It's not helping you, so I guess it's hurting you if it ain't helping you.
Yep. And that would be true with any caliber, wouldn't it?
Yeah, unless you're shooting iron sights and then the extra length, what do they call that, between the front and rear sight.
Sight radius.
Advantage on a long barrel.
Yeah, the sight
but
radius.
We're always using scope rifles.
Yeah. I would imagine that's like you said, on a rifle, that's one of the benefits of a rifle over a over a smaller, like a revolver or a pistol, is you typically have a longer sight radius. So you,
right, that's it, sight radius.
Yeah, so it's easier for you to get an accurate front sight, rear sight picture than it is on a, you know, imagine, and I know you can't see this, I know nobody driving their car can see that. Look into your car. Look into your car speaker. but if you have like a sight that's only 2 inches in front of the rear sight, it doesn't take much angle to be off a long distance, right? At 50 yards or something. But when you've got a much longer, like a 20-inch barrel, 24-inch barrel, then it's much easier to get a much better sight picture and a more accurate sight setting, okay? So not true if you have an optic on there. It doesn't care. And actually, that's one of those myths about things where it's interesting where people go, oh, well, you can't shoot a pistol that accurate because it doesn't have enough barrel length. It's like, no, the pistol will be very – if you take a pistol and put it in a ransom rest, and you know what a ransom rest is, right?
Yep.
Okay.
Put it in the same hole.
Yep. And a ransom
shot
rest for
shot.
Other people is like a vise for a pistol that holds it exactly the same, and it doesn't even – you don't even pull the trigger. It's got a little lever. You pull the trigger. And you can put the same – Like he was just saying, you can put the bullet in the same hole shot after shot after shot. So the pistol is a lot more accurate than the sighting system is, basically, with the short barrel sight radius. And you kind of overcome that with a longer barrel. But if you're using an optic, it doesn't matter. And for the most part nowadays, people even with pistols are using, I don't use them all the time, but red dots and lasers and stuff like that. So you find your own way to work around that short sight radius.
Yeah, and the barrel length versus propellant burning is to regular firearms, but air guns, it's even more critical because that piston, once it's finished traveling forward, okay, isn't putting out any more pressure against that pellet.
That's true. That's true. And same thing, I never thought about that with a, like if you're using a pre-charged air gun or something like that, you may have some kind of like a quick buildup, but you probably have instant max pressure almost, you know?
Yeah, somebody with a chronograph and a hacksaw and a cheap barrel could have some fun with that experiment.
You know, there is actually a website out there. Have you ever heard of Ballistic?
Yeah, I have. Velocity by Inch or something like that?
Ballistics by the Inch, it's called.
There you go.
And so I want to say, folks, and they do it for every caliber, okay? And so let's say that you've got a 30-06 or something like that, and you want to know if it makes a difference if you have a 24-inch barrel or a 22-inch barrel or a 20-inch barrel. Well, they've got somebody out there that did set up like a test barrel, and they did it at you have to start at the long way and work your way short. You can't you can't add to it.
Yeah, you can't add it to it. You can only take it off.
But they'll take like a 30-inch barrel. And they'll fire it, and they'll measure the velocity coming out of the barrel. And then they'll cut an inch off, and then they'll fire it at 29 and 28, 27. And just like you were saying, you can figure out at what point you've reached the maximum, right?
Yep.
Wow, that is
That's another good example of that is revolver versus auto pistol. Okay, the way I figure, you got to add the length of that chamber and revolver to the barrel length when you're talking about barrel length as far as velocity goes.
That's true. Or the front half of the chamber, because half of it's chamber and half of it is bullet travel area probably.
Right.
Although sometimes you see, like if you're shooting a 357 Magnum or something, you've got the bullet face right there at the end of the cylinder. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And barrel length officially is measured from the bolt face to the muzzle.
Yeah. So this,
okay, as far as a barrel measurement, it should apply to a revolver as well.
That's true. And then the other thing is you have a little bit of a loss in terms of your cylinder gap that you've got there. And so you have a little bit of loss of pressure there. Unless you're shooting the ugliest pistol in the world, which is Mosin 1895.
Yeah, that's a pretty cool design. Yeah,
it for folks who don't know what I'm talking about, it actually has a cylinder that when you pull the trigger, the cylinder moves forward, and it encompasses the forcing cone at the back of the barrel, and the end of the cartridge actually is like expands into that gap and it seals it, so you have no pressure loss at all. It's like an amazing design for, I want to say, 1895 is when they came out. It's an amazing design. It's probably a lot of unnecessary complication, but it's cool. So
you got to wonder why that didn't get popular and get into every manufacturer.
Yeah. Hey, well, thanks for the call today. I appreciate it.
All right. God bless.
Okay. We'll see you later. We've got Ed from Ypsilanti, and Ed, we're going to bust up against the, let's go ahead and get started, then you can carry over. Go ahead.
Well, here I am on hold, and you start talking about the ugliest pistol in the world, because I was going to mention the chamber gap, the gap there, the fit-up gap. But real quick, and then I'll get off, does the rate of rifling, is that affected by barrel length?
No. I want to say the twist rate of the rifling is the same whether you have a 6-inch barrel or a...
Oh, I realize that. Okay, let's wait till after.
Okay, you hold on and we'll talk about it. This is Dick Kupke at Trigger Talk Radio here. We'll be right back.
Wham! Talk 1600. Welcome back to Trigger Talk Radio with your host, Dick Kupke. Call now, 734-822-1600 to join in the conversation.
And we're back, and I just like listening to that bumper music. The that's actually Junior Walker and Junior Walker from Junior Walker and the All-Stars singing Shotgun. And I just watched I watched a program again this past week, which I really enjoyed. It was from 1983. It was the 25th anniversary of Motown, and it's a thing when all the Motown stars back then, they were 90% of them were still alive. And they had Junior Walker and the All-Stars. I'm so glad. That was, I think that was Dan Martin who suggested having that music on there. So I really like that. Let's see. We've got Ed from Ypsilanti, and he had a question about barrel rifling. Go ahead, Ed.
Well, I got to thinking as you were talking about muzzle velocity, which, you know, is really demonstrated by the very short pistol carbines that just are flamethrowers, which demonstrate all the energy that's lost by shortening the barrel. But we talk about different twist rates for different bullet weights. And I was wondering, the amount of barrel length dictates the number of twists given the rate of twist. So if you shorten the barrel, should you change the twist rate of the rifling?
And that is an interesting thought, because actually, if you take a look at a it might be not unusual for, like, let's say a Glock 9mm or something like that to probably have like a 1/16 inch twist. Okay, but when you look at it, that thing's only got a 5-inch barrel on it. In reality, It
a fourth of a twist.
But it has enough to launch the projectile at the desired twist rate. Okay, and so same thing that happens on a rifle. Okay, now I was just going to look up, and I'm not sure that nobody ever tried this. And in the early days of rifling a rifle, this would be a good subject. I'll have to look into this. That somebody might have thought about that and said, well, I should accelerate that twist rate as it goes out to the end of the barrel.
And,
okay.
You mean a
variable
twist
rate? Yeah, like a variable twist rate. Now, I wouldn't be surprised if at some point somebody tried that, but then they probably came back and said, no, this is too hard to do. How am I going to manufacture
CNC equipment today? It wouldn't be, you know, for the old times.
Right.
You would be, but with a CNC, I'm thinking, wow, I'd like to try that.
You know, that's an interesting thought, and maybe somebody is trying it. I will look into that for a future show. But for the most part, if you get if you have a 1 foot long barrel, you might have, let's say, for example, an AR-15, okay? The most common twist rates on AR-15s right now are 1/7 to 1/9.
Right. So you get 1/8. Yeah.
Yeah. So you get one revolution for every 7 inches or 8 inches or 9 inches or whatever your twist rate is. Now, the problem with that is that sometimes if you are using a high twist rate like that, and you are using a very light skinned, thin skinned varmint, like a light bullet, like a 40 grain bullet or something, you might try to twist that so fast that it actually starts to come apart. Okay.
And that's the reason you change the twist rate, not to just the mass of the bullet. That
explains so much. It's cause and effect, okay? You normally, on a lighter bullet, you might have a slower twist rate, okay? But that's also true for a thin-skinned varmint bullet. But now let's say you've got that same AR-15 and you're wanting to shoot 77-grain match bullets, okay? You need to have the twist, the fast twist to stabilize that bullet. Whereas if you were always shooting 40-grain light-skinned bullets, you might be fine with a 1/12.
But then does that mean that if you had the lighter but a heavier skin, I don't know if it's possible, you know what I'm saying? But
yeah.
So it's the skin, it's not the mass.
No,
I always wondered about that.
It's the mass there's two different things here. The twist rate is generally based on the mass of the bullet, okay? But then you also need to consider things like a 40-grain bullet might be fine with a 7 or 9 twist AR-15. But if it's a 40-grain really thin-skinned varmint bullet, it may fly apart because the centrifugal force causes skin to start. Do you see what I'm saying?
Okay, I got you. I thought maybe the skin was ripping off in the barrel or
no, it would rip off
the bullet because the core can't keep up.
Yeah. Well, no, it's basically it's centrifugal force and normally those varmint bullets are scored, okay? Thin skinned and scored because you're shooting little tiny things that you want good expansion in, and if you spin it too fast, you can actually cause it to fly apart. Okay.
Gotcha.
Now, then the other thing is you have to be careful with some things because, like, for example, I have a rifle called a 22-250. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of an interesting gun. It's got very heavy barrel. It's a what was called a bench rest gun. It actually for anybody from Michigan here, there was a guy over in Pentwater named Coho Bob who ran a charter fishing place over there. And Coho Bob also had a talk show and a gun store and all this kind of stuff. Well, I ended up with Coho Bob's bench rest rifle. Okay. Interestingly enough, I ran into one guy one time. I was talking to him, and I said, oh, yeah, I've got this bench rest rifle. It's from Coho Bob. The guy was like, you've got Coho Bob's rifle? It was like a god, you know? So at any rate, I didn't know him, but it's a good story at least. So,
that's cool. Well, my favorite rifling story goes back to the Revolutionary War, and I think it might have been when Washington crossed the Delaware, and he was in that battle, and some British, the quote is of this British general or officer who was sitting on his horse, and he was told to get down because they might shoot him. He says, and this is the quote, oh, they could never reach me at this.
Yeah, and that's where the riflemen, the famous riflemen, were able to get him, didn't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, brother, you talked about that last week on your show or 2 weeks ago on your show.
Well, that's true. Hey, a listener. Wow.
Yes, I'm listener number 19 for you. So,
yeah.
So at any rate, so what happened, though, is I was shooting the regular 22-250 rounds for it and some that I had hand-loaded and stuff, and I was getting outstanding groups, okay? So then I went and I bought some ammo. I was at Cabela's, and they had like this super high-speed, extra, super fast, rounds that I forget the name of the company, but they were like 4,200 feet per second, okay? I mean screaming, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so I went to shoot these things, and they were hitting the target next to the one that I had set up. And not consistently. They would hit the right one and then the left one. I'm going, what the heck is going on? Well, I think they were actually accelerating so fast that they were not grabbing the rifling and just blowing right through it. Okay?
Gotcha. Yeah,
Then when they exited the muzzle, they just tumbled. So, interesting.
Well, that's what Stoner intended. That was, right?
kind of. But I want to say it is an interesting thing about rifling, and this is the technical aspect of firearms that I'm glad some people have found it interesting today, especially you, and I'll talk more about it in the future. So thank you so much, Ed. I appreciate
it. All right,
see you. Okay, bye-bye.
Good show. Bye.
Let's see. We have got Mark from Howe on revolving firearms. Yes, Mark.
Oh, hi, Dick. Well, I got some fish fillets on the griddle again today. Oh, boy, it smells wonderful in here. I send out pictures of my cooking, but that's just some delicious fish fillets cooking right now. I wanted to talk about, and I know it's getting off the topic here, but turret revolving firearms. Are you familiar with turret revolving firearms?
I'm not sure exactly what you're talking about. Not a revolver with a cylinder, but a flat magazine that's on top of the gun?
Yes. Well, I went to joesalter.com and I purchased some things through him. It's Joe Salter, just like salt with ER on the end, .com. And he sells a lot of antique firearms and military and all that stuff. He's got this collection of arms collecting that he purchased, the Canadian Journal of Arms Collecting, and I happened to purchase this volume 21, number 3, and it's all about these turret revolving firearms. And the idea of a multi-shot gun, shotgun consisting of barrels or chambers positioned like the spokes of a wheel revolving in a horizontal plane can be traced back almost to the beginning of firearms. And they got all these manufacturers, including getting into Americans that did it, some of the, the American firearms manufacturing companies.
I agree.
Companies.
I have heard about those. I have seen pictures of those. I want to say when the anti-gunners are out there going, well, when they did the Constitution, they never foresaw these guns that fired multiple rounds and stuff. Yes, they did, actually. And there were always guns like that from the minute somebody made the first single shot, somebody was trying to figure out how to put 4, 6, or 10 rounds in them, right?
Yes, and they have, on the cover, they show a handgun and a rifle configuration where on the handgun, this wheel that sits horizontal now, horizontal, it's right above where the trigger, it's in the receiver above the trigger, and then same with the rifle. And they also have like a Gatling gun in here. I just wanted to pass on, people, go out to all you gun guys out there, go to joesalter.com, and he has the whole series that he purchased this series of Canadian firearms and journals, and you can find some really unique stuff in there. Anyone charges $5 an issue,
Neat.
And
I got to say, there is no matter of fact, I was reading some things this week, and there is no lack of different rabbit holes you can go down when you're trying to investigate things about early firearms and that is where so much innovation came from in the early technology and stuff, is just because people were always looking for innovative ways to increase firepower and stuff.
Oh, indeed. And what I like about some of the stuff he has available for purchase is a lot of it's Canadian heritage, and I'm reading about these Canadian firearms, and I'm going to purchase some more of these arm collecting journals. They go back to the infancy of the flintlocks and all that, but, I mean, when you tie it in and they talk about the American manufacturers that came in and how that all correlates and who led who in the arms race, so to speak, in design and things like that. And just the neat stuff he's got on there. He always gets new stuff coming in, and I'm telling you, it's really cool. He's got the rifle on there from the German, Hindenburg. But anyways, it's $79,000 for this gun. It was one of the hunting rifles used by before Hindenburg, the head of Germany.
Yep.
But, I mean, you can find stuff. He's got old ammo in there and all kinds of neat stuff. So go to Joe Salter, SALTER.com, and you guys will have a blast.
Well, thank you, Mark. I've got my phone lines are lighting up again. Thank you for the call today, and enjoy that fish. I can almost smell it. So.
Well, I'm going to bring some down to you guys at the station. We'll set it up.
Great. See you later, Mark. Thank you.
Okay, bye.
We've got Kurt from South Lyon on Kel-Tec Rifles. Hi, Kurt.
Oh, Dick. Well, you spoke about the PMR-30 earlier, and
yep.
I felt like you missed the CMR-30, which is an extremely interesting firearm. It's a carbine version of the same pistol.
I did see, but I didn't think about talking about that today, but I have heard of that. That's cool. Do you have one?
It's a hoot, yeah. Oh, man, yeah, I do. It is a fantastic, just accurate as you can ever imagine, and extremely compact. It has a stock that collapses similar to the old H&K, like MP5, 94s.
Yeah.
It telescopes, and it telescopes to a size that's actually too short to be legal to be considered a rifle. However, Kel-Tec got around that by disarming the trigger once the stock is collapsed to a point where it's too short.
Really?
Yeah, it's fantastic.
That's
it's
interesting. I will have to look. Let me write that one down. Hold on. I have seen those. I'll get it. I'll write it on my notes here. Okay.
I highly recommend one.
Cool. And you've had no feeding issues or anything with the PMR magazines?
No, the thing that I think you need to stick to with those is make sure you've got some good high-velocity stuff. That's
okay.
Where you get your most reliability out of those.
Okay, cool. Well, thank you. I will absolutely look that up, and we'll have to talk about that in the future.
Great. All right, Dick, thanks.
Thank you much. Bye. Okay. Well, that is fun. See, we're getting all sorts of people talking about 22 Magnums and talking about barrel rifling. What is fun? You know, I was at a breakfast yesterday, a bunch of Ford retiree guys, and we get together on the second Friday of every month and have breakfast together. And a new guy showed up, and he actually just retired in November. And, you know, he goes, well, what have you been doing to keep yourself busy? And I said, well, I'm the chairman of the York Township Planning Commission. Okay, yeah. And I do a radio show. And I said, you know, 2 hours every week for the last 10 years. And he goes, wow, what do you talk about for 2 hours, you know, on a radio show about guns? And I go, you have no idea. I said, you know, I could talk about guns 8 hours a day, 7 days a week if I needed to. So, and I would enjoy it too. So, there's no lack of things to talk about. And again, Mark was talking about these turret fed guns. Now you got to be careful with those because, and I'm sure this is the first guy who did it found out what a chain fire is. Okay, because in the old days you would like have to load, and this is true with like percussion revolvers. Remember when they first came out with percussion cap revolvers, and you had to load each cylinder with the powder charge, and then you put the round in, you put a little cap on the end, and you might use like grease, bacon grease, bear grease, whatever, to seal the end of it. Because what could happen is when you fire one, there's a lot of sparks and stuff going around, and if it goes to that next chamber, it fires the next chamber, and then that fires the next chamber. And you could, by the way, that turret gun would have them going all the way around 360 degrees, including some pointing back at you. So that's something to be concerned about, okay? Let's see. So last couple of stories. One thing I got a kick out of, this was about Philadelphia, and it talked about for the second time in recent days, there was a carjacker in Philadelphia that had to thwart the crook's intended target by using his legally armed self-carry gun. And so he actually, this guy, an 18-year-old male, approached him and pointed a gun at him. And he said, I saw the gun and I thought he was going to shoot me and take the car. So I retaliated as fast as I could just to see another day I had to shoot the guy. So he said he was shaken up at first and the police calmed him down a lot, made him feel more comfortable. Police said the car owner fired 5 shots in total around midnight at 17th and Folsom Street, wherever that is, and he did have a valid permit to carry the gun. Or so when the and so the clearance rate for carjackings in Philadelphia is well below 50%. But in this case, they caught the guy because he went to the hospital and sought treatment for his injuries. So the suspect's in custody. And the armed citizen who did the shooting, he had a message for the carjacker and others like him. Stay in school. Don't play with guns. don't rob people, and work for what you want. Sounds like good advice, huh? What do you think? We have got, gosh, more people. We have got Tom from Detroit on rifling and Joe from Tecumseh on a Marlin 57. So I'll take you both. Let's go Tom first. Go ahead.
Yeah, actually the shorter barrel can make a difference in the rifling. When the military went to the M4 with the 14-inch barrel,
yep,
that's when they went to the 1 and 7 because it's about RPMs. They had the lower muzzle velocity with the 14-inch barrel, and they had to spin them faster to stabilize the 62-grain bullets.
Yeah, I could see that because again, 62-grain bullets versus whatever, but the point is it is about RPM. It's like throwing a football, right? You have to have the right spiral on it.
Well, yeah, I mean, a shorter, fatter bullet will stabilize at a lower RPM than a long, skinny bullet.
Yep.
I just thought I'd add that. I was kind of working. I don't know if you hit that or not. I was kind of working and doing something. I didn't hear everything you were saying.
Well, we were talking, and the discussion went in a couple different directions. So, yeah, I know I was thinking about saying it, but if I didn't get it, thanks for calling and telling me about it. So,
okay, real good then. Thanks.
Okay, thank you.
Take my call. Bye.
Yep, we got Joe from Tecumseh on a Marlin 57. Hi, Joe.
Afternoon, Dick. How you doing?
Fine. Long time no talk. How you been?
Freezing my butt off right now in this nice chilly weather we got. I'm not even ice fishing.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah. No, I acquired a Marlin 57 a couple of years ago and did a Google search, and I came up with some catalog pages about the 57s, and they were saying, Marlin was saying at that time that the 57M and 22 mag is supposed to be equivalent to a 38 Smith & Wesson, not the special, but the old Black Power cartridge at 100 yards in the velocity and effect.
Oh, that's one of the selling points they gave for it when they talked about it?
Yeah, I'll send it to you through...
do that. I'd like to see that. I would say I know that a 22 Magnum with a 40-grain bullet has about 350 foot-pounds of energy. And I'm thinking that probably what an old Black Powder 38 might have, too. What do you think?
Something like that. Just, you know, with all these old top bricks around, you got to be careful.
Yeah. Well, cool. Thank you for that info. If you send it to me in an email, you got anybody who's got questions for me, you could send it at dick@triggertalkradio.com, and I'll get it. And I, like this week, I had Tom... listener Tom call and others, I always try to get back with you, or in many cases I like the topic and we talk about it on the air the following week. So thanks, Joe, I appreciate the call.
All right, you have a good day.
Okay, bye-bye. You too. Oh gosh, the last story I was going to get into, and I'll save this for next week. Canada is in a bid to replace their pistols for their military, and it turns out, believe it or not, here we are with Browning having gone out of production on the Browning High Power and Smith or Springfield Armory bringing it back. Do you know that Canada is still got the Browning High Power made in World War II as their standard sidearm for their guys? They didn't even step up to things like the Beretta 92 or anything. They're still using World War II made Browning High Powers. Unbelievable. And they've got a process that is so onerous that people are dropping out of the competition. Hard to believe. This is Dick Kupke at Trigger Talk Radio here at Wham Talk 1600. I'll see you next week.